You're listening to the Farmers Guardian podcast.
Hi, it's Olivia Midgley here, editor of Farmers Guardian, and I'm here at the Low Carbon Agriculture Show on the second day of what has been a really fantastic expo full of brilliant exhibitors showcasing the latest innovation and technology to help farmers move to a low carbon future. It's been really enlightening to see packed seminars full of really inspirational speakers and having some really forward-thinking discussions on what this actually means for farming businesses. And after a busy couple of days, I really wanted to unpack what all this means at the farm level. So to do that, I caught up with Chief Executive of the Soil Association and farmer Helen Browning and farm manager at Overbury Farms in the Worcestershire-Gloucestershire border, Jake Freestone. Helen and Jake, welcome to Low Carbon Agriculture Show. Can I just get you to give us a brief introduction of who you are and why you're here? So, Helen?
I'm Group Chief Exec of the Soil Association and also a farmer. I'm an organic farmer in North Wiltshire, very extensive dairy, also pigs, arable and agroforestry, so a real mixed enterprise.
Fantastic. And Jake?
Hi, Olivia. Jake Freestone, farm manager at Overbury, which is on the Gloucestershire-Worcestershire border. It's a mixed arable and sheep farm with some other enterprises as well, including a nursery school, some property, a bit of a shoot, some forestry, and hugely interested in how we can have a more sustainable farming and food system, actually. It's not just farming, food as well.
Well, that's a big question to start with. I mean, what does sustainable look like? What is sustainability?
Yeah, you're right. That is a massive mouthful in one go. So I probably shouldn't have even offered that as a starter for 10.
Well, that's why we're here, right? It's all about starting that conversation around what practically can we do as an industry to become more sustainable.
Absolutely. So for us, farming arable crops, mostly combinable crops, we grow some vegetables as well for another grower. It's about reducing our impact on the environment with every decision that we take, and about improving economic performance without the detriment to the environment. So for us to be sustainable, we need to be profitable. We also need to enhance and improve the environment with which we live and work. And you know, all farmers want to see that, I think. They want to see more farmland birds, they want to see more insects. It's part of the job, actually, that I look forward to in the mornings. And we also need to make sure that we are sort of socially acceptable as well, in terms of can we keep local employment. Agriculture is really challenged at the moment with finding new people to come and work on farms and share that experience and how we keep them. So there's lots of different elements to this, but can we do what we're doing in 100 years' time? And at the moment, the answer is probably no. So we need to adapt, we need to change how we grow things and the expectation that farmers and our customers have.
And Helen, I expect you'll agree with what Jake said, but who should be driving this change? Should it be farmers? Should it be policy? Should it be a mix?
Well, I think it has to be a mix, but I think that what worries me sometimes is that farmers are perhaps feeling a bit put upon in these conversations rather than, as Jake's doing, driving from the farm up. So I'm really keen to see farmers taking control of their futures and being given the opportunity to do that. You know, actually, we need to support farmers to kind of make these changes. So you need the right sort of economic and policy framework so that, you know, the right things are rewarded over time. And we're really clear about the direction of travel and when regulation is going to come in and what it's going to look like for farmers over time. And then we need to give them the tools to be able to make those changes, the changes that are right for their own farm, their own family, because every farm is different. Every farm has different assets, different opportunities, different skill sets within the family. And you've got to, there's no one size fits all that's going to work for everybody. But the same basic principles that Jake's outlined are crucial. So I think it's about that mix of getting the right policy environment and then giving farmers the wherewithal to grab that and run with it.
And those economic levers as well. There was a point raised in one of the sessions this morning about how to sell this to farmers as more of business resilience and, you know, saving money, shoring up your business for the future. rather than these arbitrary kind of you must do this targets and you know and what that means. So do you think that we perhaps should reframe the conversation, Jake, when we're talking to farmers about what this drive actually is and what it means for your business?
I do. Farmers are really daunted at the moment. It's a really challenging time for all, I think all sectors actually, in terms of input costs, the output value, more and more legislation, and it is it's a really daunting time, a scary time actually. So I think the idea that we can try and encourage farmers to sort of think for themselves and actually try to develop their own strategy for more resilience. And that to me is probably the way to try and sell this, if you like, to farmers. It's not coming down from the top, but yes, we do need to reach net zero, not just in the farming world, actually, across our society. And I think that is a much bigger challenge, actually, and government needs to really try and grapple with that, because it's more than just farmers. Farmers have a massive role to play, huge amount of opportunity, but it also that comes with kind of quite a sort of a scary, daunting sort of feeling. So the more help that we can give them, so we're a LEAF demonstration farm, Linking Environment and Farming. So how can we use organisations like LEAF, like the Soil Association, innovative farmers, to get good farming practice out there to farmers? And as Helen says, give them a suite of ideas that they can sort of pick and choose from, but it's got to be long term. Farming is a long term game. SFI, Sustainable Farming Incentive, a 3-year option. 3 years, yes, that's going to get us over a trough at the moment, but actually if you're going to change farming businesses, you need 10, you need 15, and that's got to come from government, that's got to come from policy, and then that will give farmers a bit more confidence to say, right, here's an index link payment for your transition into a more sustainable system. The government's going to back it, and it's going to be for 15 years. They won't do it, but that's what probably it needs, actually.
It can't be a political football, can it?
No, it can't.
You know, this can't be something that people just keep trading off and trying to, you know, score points on. You need that long-term commitment to this to be able to enable farmers to invest, and the supply chain to invest, because the supply chain is going to have to play a real role in helping farmers invest in some of that transition too.
Yes, absolutely. They need to share the pain a little bit, and it's in their ambition to be able to do that, or in their gift to be able to do it, but they need to have the same ambitions as well for their supply chain and not pass it all down the supply chain to the farmer. That's the other thing that worries me a little bit. Being offered a payment per tonne of grain at the moment from some companies, and by the way, in the small print, you're signing away your carbon as part of that deal, and to me that is very, very wrong.
But the language is incredibly complex for farmers like me to get my head around. You know, all the talk of scope emissions and inventories and what counts and what doesn't count in terms of your net zero calculations. All of this is really complicated. So I do think there are some really important things that farmers can just kind of get on with that are right in the sweet spot of stuff that we know will help our farm resilience. You've just been talking about soils and, you know, and just it's a no-brainer that we invest in our soils because it'll save us money, it'll lock up carbon, it'll be better for biodiversity. Same with trees actually as well. So it's finding the things that farmers can just get on with that are no regrets stuff that are going to help their farms become more resilient over time. And I think that it feels more tangible to farmers than some of that kind of theoretical talk.
So it would be good to know some practical steps that farmers can take, but also is there a need to, for you know, upskilling? Someone mentioned in a debate this morning about, you know, essentially CPD for this stuff. You know, if farmers are feeling daunted about it, I guess they'll go and look to LEAF and the Soil Association, but where do they start with this? If they want to take some practical steps now, what would you suggest that they do?
From our point of view, if we're talking about sort of the steps to regenerative agriculture, so building resilience into your business, BASE is an incredible small organisation, really practical tips. in terms of how you can start that transition process. And it is being partly funded now through the Sustainable Farming Incentive. We've got direct drilling payments coming up along soon, companion cropping, insecticide-free farming. Now, all those little bits are just starting to help change people's perception and lower the risk, actually, of making some of these decision changes.
Yeah, so, because often the risk, it can't all be at the farmer's gate, can it?
That's the challenge. So, you know, farmers are under pressure at the moment. High costs, low output. Why would you change what you're doing in one way at this point? Because the risk is too much. You go and change and it all goes wrong. Ooh, you're in a really bad position. Carry on doing what you're doing normally. Still bad, but at least you are comfortable in yourself and knowing what you're doing. And how you change perceptions and thinking process is really, really difficult. It's not to be underestimated at all, but that's kind of what we need to do. So these sort of support payments that can sort of offset some of the risk, I think are hugely important going forward if you want to get change.
And one of the things that we've done from the Soil Association is set up Soil Association Exchange, which is a way of measuring where you are today across a range of outcomes and then helping farmers decide what action they want to take that's right for them and where that funding might come from to enable them to do that. And that seems to me the kind of stuff that we need to baseline, we need to know where we are, and then we need to be thinking about, okay, what's the right steps for me, my family? Where can I find that funding? How can I be confident that this is going to take us into a financially secure future? And actually, that's where the politicians also need to play a role in actually setting up that kind of framework. But I think things like Exchange are going to be helpful tools, and we do kind of free to use apps so farmers can do it themselves if they want to. But I think I certainly know as a farmer that I'm going to need, when I'm here today and I'm seeing all these energy businesses, for instance, all looking to sell me solar, wind, hydro, biomass, all these kind of options, I need to think through, if energy is going to be part of the picture, how do I decide what's going to be right for me to do on my farm? And that's going to take quite a lot of teasing out. And a lot of us don't have the headspace on the farm every day to do all of that thinking and to evaluate all of the options and what's the grid connection going to be in my area and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of complicated, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the danger is you just don't do anything.
That is the risk. Yes, and also you want the best advice from companies as well, and you know that might not be necessarily available. So it takes time. You take 3 or 4 companies to come and quote for some solar or
come
something
to the
like
show.
That.
Come to low carbon.
Come to the low carbon agriculture show. Absolutely. And this is the place where you can compare and you can have that conversation with people. But it's diversification off the farm income away from sort of mainstream food production. And it's part of that mixed enterprise element, I think, which all farm businesses had. And if you go back to the 1930s, a third of the output was for energy production. Mm. It was oats for the horses, straw for the horses. And that, you know, historically is where we've sort of come from. So, we need to go back to that point.
Such a good point, that, because I think farmers often think that energy is almost in conflict with farming rather than actually it being an essential part of it.
Absolutely.
A bit like they've seen trees are in conflict with farming when actually they are an essential part of it.
Yeah.
So I think it's that more holistic mindset that you're advocating and the return to thinking about mixed enterprises, mixed farming, not putting all your eggs in one basket, but actually looking at the whole economy of the farm and the community around it, that's really exciting, actually.
It is. It's full of opportunity.
But it takes a lot more management.
Just take an awful lot of headspace.
Yeah.
You need to become an expert in even more things.
You do. We heard yesterday about, the regen theme is obviously, it's just run throughout the 2 days, actually, and almost have mixed enterprises. I'm talking now about putting livestock back onto arable units. Is that almost going to become the new standard?
I think it's got a role to play. As Helen was saying earlier on, every farm is different. Every farmer's ambition is difficult. It's probably different. And I know some farmers that hate livestock and they just won't go back on there. So can we do that same livestock kind of benefit in a different way? So composting, straw for muck deals, those sorts of things, actually trading will become more and more. if you look at where all the livestock is in the country, a lot of it west focused, I'm thinking poultry, I'm thinking the massive environmental problems that we have associated with that. And actually, are there technologies that can take that waste, that problem, and ship it to the east that might then rebalance some of those environmental challenges? That needs investment, it needs planning, it needs legislation, it needs government, the environment agency to work with farmers to let it happen. So it comes back to Helen's point earlier on about lots of these things shouldn't be political. Here is a strategy, a bit like the food strategy that Henry Dimbleby did, 25-year plan, which is now gathering dust somewhere. That's the sort of policy we need for agriculture.
Holistic
in an ideal world.
Quite a large problem that you're not going to solve in silos, are you?
No, you're not going to solve it in silos. It is about that integration. And actually, when you look at the amount of what we call waste, and I don't put manures in that category, but we think of it as a waste product. You've got food waste. You've got all these nitrogen and nutrient sources that we could be deploying back on our land to the benefit of our soils and reducing our reliance on nitrogen fertilizer, on synthetic nitrogen fertilizer, and actually on phosphates too. So there's so many opportunities. We've got to think a little bit more strategically about some of this stuff.
Yep.
And I think it's really exciting that on a lot of farms there are livestock coming back on. I'd love to think that actually we're going to stop quite so many animals being quite so concentrated in some places. And I still have a bit of a problem with some of the really indoor 365 day systems. So actually getting those animals onto free range farms and would also be good. But I think there's a combination of solutions here.
But that comes back again to the value of food production or the value of food at the end of the day. I'm sure the majority of farmers would love to halve the stocking rate and double the value and actually have a lot less stress themselves, a lot less stress on the farm system. But they can't do that. They can't get off the treadmill. And this is where the food element has to come in. And actually, do you really value your food? And currently it comes with a cost environmentally which isn't valued within the price of that product. You're shaking your head, Olivia,
well,
but only because
it's
a massive,
but how
a
do
massive
we,
challenge. So how do we address that?
And farmers certainly can't change that. And,
no.
We heard this morning, didn't we, about, diets do have to change. But if people aren't, Jack Bobo said in the keynote yesterday that, if people won't change what they eat to save their lives, why would they change what they eat to save the planet? And I just thought that was, incredibly poignant, because it's right, isn't it? How on earth do we start reversing that? Because we have to look at people's diets, don't we? Or people have to look at their diets.
Yes, and I think maybe there's a way into that conversation which is less you must change and this is what you're being told to do, a little bit like we're saying about farmers. But actually, if you look back over the last 10 or 20 years, if you wanted to go and get a vegetarian meal 10 years ago or 20 years ago, you were going to eat something dreadful. And now there's great that it's about taste and convenience and all the things that we love about meat or dairy or whatever. I mean, I could never live without dairy. But do you make this an attractive, easy to do thing rather than something that feels like it's a I mustn't do this, rather than actually I'd almost prefer to do that. And so I think there are shifts that you can make along those lines which are not quite so challenging.
Yeah, and not just on diet, but the way people travel and
everything. Make it easy.
If it's
so much more expensive to go on a train than it is to get on a plane, then you're not going to shift people. There's so many because we're not pricing carbon into the system at a high enough value, it's madness that it's cheaper for me to fly to Edinburgh than it is to go on the train there. And I have to do that quite often. And as a charity, what decision do I make? Is it the planet or is it the fact that I've got people's, supporter money that I'm spending here? And I think we're all in those kind of conundrums, which is why we've got to get the policy frameworks right, so that it's easy for us to do the right thing as business people or as farmers, rather than actually feeling we're doing it out of the goodness of our hearts and losing money along the way.
Yeah. And just a final word, we've been asking a lot of our speakers over the course of the show to give us, our listeners, a top tip. For any farmer who just wants to make a change today, tomorrow, this week, this month, what would your top tip be in terms of, you know, making an effort on this journey to becoming more sustainable?
I think the easiest thing would be go and measure one thing. So let's break it down. We were talking earlier on about this net zero and what a huge concept that is to process. But if you think of one thing on your farm, the diesel for your cultivations, for instance, go and measure that and then measure it next year and see actually what's the impact if I can halve that to my financial performance. And actually think of it that way. Think of it as you're making more resilience into your business, building more resilience in. And then that will just start the thought process going back, well, I've done that, oh, that's good, so I've saved £3,000, excellent, right, what's the next step?
Yeah, I think along those lines, I mean, I think maybe, you know, dig a hole in a field once a week and go and have a look at your, and make sure you're having a really good look at your soil. And I think that starts to trigger all sorts of things about what I really need to do to help this soil thrive and look after me and my family into the future.
Well, Helen Browning and Jake Freestone, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Thank you very much.
Huge pleasure.
Pleasure. Great to see you. Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more. And don't forget to head to our website, farmersguardian.com, to check out all the latest news and features and reports from Low Carbon Agriculture Show. See you soon.